about the inhumanity of the proposed camping ban. Do you not understand the extent to which such laws can ruin not only lives, but the fabric of the community and the decencies which ought to exist among us? Are you oblivious to the violence that allows those with homes and money and privilege to do to those who lack them? That's Peter Merrin. And this is an article in this month's Street Spirit, which has many such articles, very good ones, by Terry Messman. Isla Vista Tent City Arises After Homeless Death. And that's available from Street Spirit Vendors. It's available at the Homeless Service Center out at Coral Street. It's available to Page Smith Community House. You might be able to find it at the Santa Cruz Service Corps as well. I believe some copies may have been left there. That's at the group that's doing... volunteer work isn't quite... They do some volunteer work. They're looking to get paid to do conservation work in the community, and they were formed in the wake of the destruction of Camp Paradise, which I suppose still does exist as a sort of a small encampment on the outskirts of town of about 15 people, still led by Larry Templeton. We're going to actually try to reach him today and get an update from... I tend to call it the former Camp Paradise or the mini Camp Paradise because it's no longer... an encampment on city property in the same way that it was. It isn't open to everyone to come in there now as it used to be. They did have their rules, but you could, you know, if they were in a pinch, they would put people up for a couple of nights. It was sort of emergency overflow and had up to, 60, 70, even 80 people, I understood, at one time. In a population of 1,000 to 2,000 in the city with accommodations for in the summer for only 40, it's quite understandable that people need to find their own accommodations, and with rents escalating, people being evicted, with cases of domestic violence, people fleeing and looking for safe places to go, Camp Paradise performed a real service. And of course, it no longer performs that service because it's out there on private property. It was driven away by the city and by the city's laws, and of course, finally by a flood. Although for 8 or 9 months it stayed militantly refusing to move, and now it's found a legal place, which is good, you know, for the folks that are there, but it makes it somewhat of a different project. And I guess now I understand they've applied to Parks and Rec to get a 2 weeks in a park exception that will allow them to kind of spruce up other park areas and other greenbelt areas for 2 weeks before leaving that park. Provided they can meet the 8 stringent conditions that are required, including security deposits and California Environmental Quality Act restrictions and insurance, all this stuff, which makes any use of the parks by ordinary homeless people completely out of the question. You won't get a permit. But if you're lucky enough to have a nonprofit cover and you're able to mobilize in a group for a conservation project for 2 weeks, and you only have 15 people and no more, then there's a possibility if Jim Lang likes you. He's the czar of the Parks and Rec Department. Nice guy. He's been in office far too long, just like the rest of these highly paid bureaucrats, such as Dick Wilson, city manager, John Barisoni, city attorney, Steve Belcher, chief of police, Seal Cirillo, head of the redevelopment agency. And the list does go on somewhat, but we need... off with their heads, is what I say. Not, of course, the death sentence, but we have to rotate these folks out. We need some new people because the staff of these groups really runs the city. No matter what the promises, what pretty promises the city council candidates make and will make in the months ahead as they run for city council, they don't do anything more. They take no steps beyond what the staff tells them to do in almost 90% of the cases. And the claims that there were going to be changes with the so-called Three Amigos, Fitzmaurice, Cronin, and Sugar, of course, were shown to be the saddest kind of wishful thinking. And we all bought it. Some of us bought it. Some of us didn't. Actually, I don't think I bought it. The Street Shit Sheet, in its election edition issue of 1998, did not endorse any of those candidates. It said, and endorsed street demonstrations. That's what we need. And we still do, we still need the same thing. We need civil disobedience. We need massive pressure. We need earth-first type dramatic protest. It doesn't have to be illegal. It doesn't have to be violent. It doesn't have to be Well, it probably has to be rude. Some people don't like rude. It doesn't even, I guess it doesn't have to be rude. Mass picketing would be a great idea. But it has to happen. And right now, of course, it's not happening. And for those who'd like to see that kind of thing happen, to decriminalize homelessness, to allow people to sleep, let's say, legally, between the hours of 11 and 8:30, which is now a city crime under Municipal Code 6.36010, even if you do it in your own vehicle, even if you do it in your own legally parked vehicle, even if you're disturbing not a soul in town, if Sergeant or Officer Seeley sees you, he can tow you away and impound your dogs, as he did to Kathy and Danny Grego about a week ago. She called me from jail twice. They had impounded her 10 dogs. They had taken the two vehicles. And she was going to be on the last show with Danny, but she had to get her dogs out. She wasn't able to come. I invited her to call into this show, and perhaps she will. I hope to hear from her. Kathy and Danny, call home or call Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's criminal in this city to do what you need to do to survive as a homeless person. And that's a crime. And it needs to be changed by the kinds, by whatever means you change such things. And I look back to the kind of civil disobedience that changed the segregation laws. But again, that requires quite a commitment. There are other models too. The IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, were able to reassert the First Amendment, which seems to be lacking at City Council, for example, by just showing up in mass at different cities and having speakouts on the sidewalk. And they filled the jails. They were arrested not for any kind of violence or illegal behavior, but because the cities involved wanted to not to allow people to speak on the sidewalk. Just like they don't want to allow me to have a table on the sidewalk in front of Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe. They don't enforce that consistently. I was back the next day with the same table in the same place, and they did nothing. But they're showing that you have to pay a price. You have to pay a cost for doing that. You have to go to court. You have to take away from the energy and the attention and the focus of the issue that you want to discuss and deal with the legal ramifications or the illegal behaviors of the authorities who are able to do this until they're brought to task, brought up to account, or never brought up to account, or at least until the practice has changed in the years ahead. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Robert Norse. This is Bathrobes Piers Broadside, Sundays, 3.5 hours of me, and folks I interview, and music I choose, and it's me, 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 and mine, but it's hopefully about you, too, if insofar as you're concerned with civil rights on the streets, and insofar as you're concerned with problems with the police department, issues that relate to poor people, call in, 427-3772. Call in and let's see what you got to say. While I'm waiting for this mass of calls, let's listen to this song.
I heard a woman talking, and to me what she said just made sense. She was lamenting the state of affairs, how some people can be so dense. She said she had three wonderful children, two girls and their little brother. And nobody gave her problems for loving each child as much as the other. But they'll say you are better, perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover. I like Italian espresso, but I also dig French wine. And now and then that BC bud leaves me feeling fine. I like to get a buzz sometimes, I like sobriety. Most people understand this, They also like variety, but they'll say you are better. Perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover. Well, I like the redwood forests, but the desert makes me wanna sing. And those little Irish villages when the church bells ring. I like to busk in Boston and hang out in the cafes in Berlin. I like lots of different places and nobody tells me it's a sin. But they'll say you are better, perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover. Each one of the four seasons leaves me feeling good. Sitting in the shade in summer, in the winter chopping wood. Sometimes I like cloudy days, but I also dig the sun. And I don't think I'm crazy for having so much fun. But they'll say you are better, perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover. They'll say you are better, perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover.
And that was David Rovics, as all good David Rovics fans know. Again, another cut from Living in These Times, Polyamory song. And speaking as one who believes in that philosophy, I'm glad to hear that occasionally it gets a little good press and good song. So, hey, here's another article from, well, wait a minute, looks like we got a phone call coming in. It's very strange. I hear a phone ringing, but when I pick up the phone, I get a dial tone. I don't know why that is. Try again, caller. I'm not sure what the story is here. We have a phone, I think, is working. I received a call earlier today, so I'm not sure what the story is, why we're not getting proper phone interaction. Phone line in is 427-3772, and it's ringing. Let's see what we got.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Yeah, I think it's working just fine there, Robert.
Oh, cool.
I think it might be you.
No way.
And I just wanted to make a little bit of a comment. This morning I've been having some struggles within myself because I'm realizing how sexist, of course, our society is and how it's conditioned many people to be supportive of that sexism, even unconsciously. Mm-hmm. Now, you and I have talked a little bit on the air, as well as in person, about sexism being an issue for me, and I don't know, kind of something it seemed to me, if I remember correctly, that you kind of accept it about yourself because you said that, you know, you were conditioned, you were raised in a sexist society, so yeah,
no,
you're sexist.
I never said that.
Okay.
What I said is that it is part of the air we breathe. It's like racism and homophobia and all the rest of it, and that it's something that, you know, we all are. whether we acknowledge it or not. And it's all very well to say we're not, and I guess some people maybe can reach the point where they're not, but it's really hard to reach.
It's a struggle. Yeah. It's a struggle, but I just wanted to ask,
right,
because I feel like, you know, it's not a struggle that we should avoid, or I mean, I feel like it's a struggle we should embrace, and that we should really be. I have issues around racism, mm-hmm, mainly towards Asian women and towards Mexican men, and it's really it's something that I fucking have to deal with daily. It's something I have to like check myself on daily, and it's really painful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard for me to sit here and tell you on the air that I fucking am that way,
mm-hmm,
but it's fucking my realities, and I do struggle with it daily. And I hope that I can get over it and you know, stop the abuse that is inherent in racism,
mm-hmm,
in any way that I can. And I just wanted to ask that you try to do the same with sexism.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to comment that, like, I've heard a lot of positive things about polyamory,
mm-hmm,
and I've also heard some negative things about it. And one of the negatives that I've heard that I wanted to kind of share, and I guess I wanted to put a shout out to the women that are out there that, you know, if you're in a polyamorous relationship, that, you know, you should get busy too, because like one of the criticisms that I've heard is that it really works better for men,
mm-hmm,
than it does for women, that men will have more partners and the woman will not, and it's more of a male's kind of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to, I don't think that that's true in all polyamorous relationships,
mm-hmm,
but I can see how it could be true in some.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to encourage women to go out and have fun if that's the kind of relationship they're in.
Damn straight.
To not just let their husband have all the fucking fun, or their boyfriend.
Or the fun fucking.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to say this. This might interest you. One of the things that I've talked to some of the organizers of the Right to Sleep Summit about is actually having workshops on homophobia in the homeless community, which, you know, or one workshop about that. Because, you know, it's a big, you know, and racism for that matter.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, the third pillar of the triad, which is sexism, also needs to be addressed. And perhaps if you're going to be at this conference, you might want to consider.
Where is the conference? Talk about it. Can I take the answer off the air?
Sure.
This is you've been talking about this conference.
Oh, yeah.
Would you give the time and everything again?
I will.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I have to say, the main purpose of the conference is to organize, for me, the main purpose. People will decide what they want to do at the conference themselves, of course. But what I'd like to see is a movement to end the sleeping ban and laws that criminalize homeless people. But I think the caller was wondering where the conference is. It's at 1135 North Branciforte. Again, 1135 North Branciforte Street in Santa Cruz. It might be Avenue, but it doesn't make any difference. And it's going to start formally at 7 o'clock in the evening of May 3rd, Friday, but actually probably a little before, because we're expecting a lot of folks to be coming from different places in the up and down the coast, different encampments. We just heard me read about Isla Vista. I mentioned Dignity Village, Tent City 3 in Seattle. Hoping to get some folks from Las Vegas. I'm still researching that. Also from encampments that were tried and were crushed by the authorities, like the South Spit Jetty in Eureka, Navarre Beach in Mendocino County, Whispering Pines in Marin, Civic Center encampments of the early 90s in San Francisco, Coral Street Open Air Shelter in Santa Cruz, Los Angeles had a tent city in 1985. Who knows? I'm going to be sniffing around trying to get as many folks involved as possible. The idea being, again, both to find a way to decriminalize homelessness in Santa Cruz, because I'd like to see us do it here. It's not in a sort of an attempt to get to make some nice general civil liberties statements and then go home, or even to exchange information and disperse. I'd like to see us decide if we can actually commit ourselves to doing something over the next 3 months. Again, 1135 North Branciforte. 1135 North Branciforte is where it's going to be held. You want more information on this, you can leave a message on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, which is a voicemail for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's the group I belong to, and the group that it kind of began working on this summit. It's being joined by other groups. I got the Green Party Assembly's endorsement yesterday, so I commend the Green Party, and I commend Joe Rigney, who as well as Thomas Levitt, Linda Lemaster, and others, Carl Wilson, who led that charge, Ray Glock Grunike. I'm sure I'm leaving people out. And it's going to be a series of workshops, get-togethers, just essentially getting everybody in the same on the same half acre to talk and see where we can go with it. And maybe I'm a little off base, you know, talking about homophobia and sexism and racism, because these are, frankly, these are politically correct topics that to some extent turn me off, not because it isn't an important issue to be dealt with, but because it seems like it's something that is brought up as a sort of a test of political correctness rather than as a something to be dealt with and addressed in a concrete, practical way. And if people want to find ways to kind of work on this practically as it relates to homeless people, I would be more than happy to see that, like to see that be a part of this. I'm kind of trying to put together some of the workshops. So you can come to a HUF meeting. We meet every Wednesday at 8:30 in the morning at Baker's Square. That's at 1107 Ocean Street, right a couple blocks from the freeway between Denny's and Santa Cruz Diner, if you know where those all-night joints are. 8:30 in the morning on Wednesday, or you can give a call to the HUF line and 423-HUF, 423-4833. And there's also a number for Thomas Levitt. I have his home phone, but he prefers to have you call him on a cellular phone, which I don't have here. So if you call me on the HUF line, 423-HUF, I'll get you that number. He should also be contacted because he's the person who's going to be putting up people in his backyard and telling people where to go around town. I believe we're also going to try to get Parks and Rec to volunteer a park for one night for this. Just as the AIDS walk gets a park, just as the dog show gets a park, just as the Russians who did their peace march back in 1988 got a park, why can't homeless people do that? Well, because Jim Lang says no, because the chief police says no, because the city managers say no, as they have, as they did in 1989 when we sought a park for Housing Now, as they have at other times, but we're going to try again. And that's part of that whole getting ready for the Right to Sleep Summit coming up again May 3rd through 5th, Friday evening, Saturday, and Sunday in Santa Cruz, and folks are invited. So getting back to the whole issue, well, one of the main issues that we're talking about at this summit, which is, as I said, to me, the primary thing is to get the activists together to do something about the sleeping ban. There are plenty of other laws to deal with, too, but why not start with that one? It's well known. It's key to any kind of advance. You've got to be able to sleep. And it's a basic civil rights concern, a human rights concern, actually. But also, there's the issue of vehicular sleeping and encampments. People buy vehicles to sleep in because they can't afford rent, because that's really the only way they can make ends meet. That's the only way they can live in any kind of half-safe way, half-comfortable way. Not that living in a vehicle is always so comfortable. And here's an article about that, and hence that's also going to be, I believe, a topic of discussion at this summit. Legal RV Park, the Most Affordable Form of Housing, by Terry Messman. On behalf of the Committee for Social Justice, Attorney Glenn Maurer has racked up a very impressive string of successes in defending homeless defendants whose civil rights have been violated. Over the past 2 years, since retiring as head of the Public Defender's Office in Santa Barbara, Maurer has given free legal representation to the poorest of the poor, winning several acquittals of homeless and disabled people charged with quality of life crimes. Actually, he's won virtually every case he's taken, either by having it dismissed, by winning in court, or by getting it won on appeal. Now, the Committee for Social Justice has launched a multifaceted effort to legally defend homeless people hit with criminal charges for sleeping in recreational vehicles, RVs, while simultaneously advocating for a legal campground for vehicle dwellers, and even sending out a mechanic one step ahead of the police to fix the broken-down vehicles of homeless people to prevent them from being impounded. Maurer's repeated successes in using the necessity defense to win acquittals for homeless defendants had the police feeling stymied, Maurer said. The police became frustrated with the fact that they were losing and tried to figure out these alternative strategies to win, and that meant they had to go to the city council and get permission to change the law. They proposed changing the law to make it illegal for RVs, anything larger than a pickup truck, to park anywhere in the city overnight on any street or in any park. Sort of a little, sort of similar to what, although in a more limited way, Emily Riley, our councilwoman here, the one who was so big for ending the sleeping ban before she got into office, and then afterward joined the Catherine Byers, Marty Wormhout clique, which wants to keep the sleeping ban in place. She was the one who passed a resolution in this last fall, setting up signs no parking signs 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. in Harvey West Park because there was so-called daily cleaning of the streets, which of course is preposterous. They don't clean the streets every day anywhere in the city. And the idea that they would be doing it every day at Harvey West was simply a guise for getting rid of homeless vehicles that were parked there. So she similarly was going after people in recreational vehicles at the behest of essentially a bigoted reaction from Harvey West neighbors and the Parks and Rec Department. Instead of getting together and discussing the issue with homeless residents and seeing what could be done, having a public hearing on the issue, she took this matter straight to City Council and rammed it through in the middle of a Camp Paradise debate. It was done. This was actually done before the Camp Paradise debate, but it was rammed through nonetheless without any kind of real public hearings. And this is the opposite of a democratic process, and this is the opposite of a consensus process. Even if you, even if you don't believe in consensus, which means getting almost everybody involved to win, you certainly there should be. I think there's more general agreement, at least, a democratic process where the majority of the people get to have their concerns at least discussed and addressed. And then the more basic issue of the human rights issue, which is these aren't subject to majority rule. Human rights are basic rights that all of us have that can't be taken away, even if a majority decides that the Jews shouldn't have rights or that the Nazis shouldn't have rights. No, everyone in this society is entitled to rights. And that's something, homeless people are entitled to rights, and they don't have them in Santa Cruz. That's what makes the sleeping ban so egregious. So, continuing with this article, after this long interruption, apparently the police in Santa Barbara are going to try an even more harsh version of what Emily Riley just successfully passed here in Santa Cruz. To make it illegal for RVs to park anywhere in the city overnight in any street or in any park. The Committee for Social Justice asked Santa Barbara officials not to enact such a sweeping ban, with the result that the City Council voted 5-1 against the police proposal. The Council then voted 6-1 to set up a task force to develop a proposal for RV parking in church lots, public lots, or a permanent designated parking area for vehicle dwellers. The task force got a boost recently when Santa Barbara Mayor Marty Bloom announced that one of her main goals in the coming year was to establish a legal RV park for vehicle dwellers. Compare Santa Cruz, which won't even discuss this issue. Won't even discuss the idea of allowing vehicles to have a vehicle park to park in, or to have the right to park in certain areas of the city, as they do in Santa Monica, thanks to Robert Meyer's enlightened law from the 80s, which puts residential zones out of question, but allows vehicles to park elsewhere, unless there are complaints, in which case you can get 20 minutes to move to another area. So it's Santa Cruz is way behind the times. Eugene, which has set up parking areas for three vehicles and even sanitary facilities, as I understand it, for numbers of vehicles in different places in Eugene. Portland, which has eliminated completely its camping ban, even though police continue to try to use other laws to harass the homeless. I'm not sure actually what the vehicle situation is in Portland, and if we have anybody listening up there in Oregon and you know or can find out, I'd love to hear from you either on the air, 831-427-3772, or call the Huff line afterward, 831-423-4833. Let us know, are they still harassing vehicles in Portland? Or is there, because that actually, it was a vehicular case that involved that overthrew the Portland City camping ordinance. That was about a year and a half ago. Continuing with this article by Terry Messman. The task force got a boost recently when Santa Barbara Mayor Marty Bloom declared that one of her main goals in the coming year was to establish a legal RV park for vehicle dwellers. Maurer said he would like to see Santa Barbara allow up to three vehicles on public lots, private lots, and the parking lots of religious groups with the permission of the owner. That dissipates the problems throughout the community in smaller groups and has less potential for problems than a larger site, he said. Committee for Social Justice founder Peter Marin voiced a cautious optimism that the new mayor and other city officials are becoming more open to the concept of a legal place for vehicle dwellers. They finally have begun to treat the RV dwellers as if they were simply people priced out of the housing market and not as willful bohemians who have arbitrarily adopted an eccentric lifestyle, he said. Marin said that about 400 to 500 SRO, that's single room occupancy, hotel rooms, have disappeared in downtown Santa Barbara over the past few years as hotels are either torn down or upgraded into tourist hotels. In the context of the growing shortage of affordable housing, Marin said, it's possible for city officials to move in one of two directions. First, they can move in the direction that they seem to be moving in San Francisco, which is to adopt harsher and harsher measures to make it impossible for people to survive on the streets. The other direction, he said, is to recognize that increases in homelessness are unavoidable given the loss of SRO housing, rapidly rising rents, and stagnant wages and disability benefits that can't keep up with housing costs. More and more people are being forced to the streets and are going to be there for a long time to come because it will be impossible to build affordable housing in the near future that will house everyone, he warned. Therefore, any city official in any town in America who doesn't have their head up their ass knows that homelessness will not go away and that changing the laws by making them stricter will not make the problem go away either. Message to Emily Riley, message to Ed Porter, message to Mark Premack, message to Marty Wormhout. A key to convincing city officials to try more humane approaches, Marin said, is to show them that homeless people are fundamentally decent men and women whose available wages or stipends cannot keep up with the rise in rents. We have been able to point out to city officials that most of the homeless people now living in RVs used to be housed in Santa Barbara, either in cheap apartments or in inexpensive downtown hotels, he said. They have long histories as renters and citizens, and now, out of necessity, they live in vehicles. And I think we have partially won the battle here to establish recreational vehicles as the most affordable form of housing. And that's something we might consider doing here in Santa Cruz. If you wish to work on a project that documents the fact that people who are living in their vehicles were previously in renters or lived in more permanent accommodations, give a call to 423-HUFF. We need all the helpers we can get on this matter, 423-4833. The Committee for Social Justice of Santa Barbara recently got a homeless woman off the streets by loaning her $3,000 to purchase a vehicle to sleep in. This is an extraordinary investment for any town to make, Marin said. Housing people for a one-time expense of $3,000 for a kind of housing which is going to last between 5 or 10 years for people who have no place to go, that is an extraordinarily inexpensive way to save lives. Committee for Social Justice Attorney Maurer said that along with creating new SRO hotels to replace several hundred units lost to gentrification, legalizing RV campgrounds is essential. The RV solution is a pragmatic, natural alternative for people who are too poor to live in many communities, he said. Most of the people we represent are folks who live on permanent disability. On $600 to $800 a month, no matter where they live, they can't afford real housing. So this movement will just continue. It's unrealistic to think that people will live in bushes rather than live in RVs or that they will disappear. There is no place for them to disappear to. So eventually society is going to have to face the truth of their need and not close their eyes. Asked about the current rush by cities across California to drive away homeless people by outlawing camping, Maurer replied, "If one takes a moment to think about it, it's grossly unfair. The reality is that there are literally thousands of people who can't afford traditional housing." As the former head of the Public Defender's Office, Maurer is perhaps one of the most experienced attorneys to ever throw the full weight of literally decades of legal expertise into the battle to defend the rights of homeless people for free. "I never had an interest in making a lot of money, so it gives me satisfaction to do this," Maurer said. "One of the great things about being a public defender that folks tend not to understand is the joy of being able to help people without them having to pay for it. I get great satisfaction from this," he added. "I hate injustice. I hate to see a system that overreaches or abuses people." And that's in this month's April Street Spirit. It's Legal RV Park, the Most Affordable Form of Housing by Terry Messman. And you can buy this from the local vendor on the street in downtown Santa Cruz. Or if you can't find any, give a call to Becky Johnson, who's the sort of vendor coordinator. And she can be reached at 429-8529. Becky Johnson, she's in the phone book. She's the only Becky Johnson there. Meanwhile, you can call 427-3772 if you'd like to comment on anything you've heard. That's 427-3772. That's a Free Radio Santa Cruz, and that's what you're listening to right now. We broadcast 24 hours a day, no license, no apology. But unfortunately, from time to time, we have to say no callers. So let's change that. Give us a call. Let us know what you're thinking, because I'm going to be here for the next... Whoa, looks like the next 2 hours, although I got plenty to say. I'd like to have you put in your 2 cents or $2 or $20 worth, which is one of the things that the Green Party did last night, to my surprise and to my gratification, I got to say. The Green Party has its history in the last couple of years has been pretty horrible around the sleeping ban. I mean, it's made some efforts under the persistent encouragement of David Silva, who actually organized fasts against the sleeping ban and met with city officials in the summer of 2000 to try to set up the safe and legal places to sleep in the industrial zones, at least for vehicles, or just to suspend the sleeping ban in those areas. And they were, of course, that was killed by Catherine Byers, who's running for office again. Keep that in mind before you vote for her. As well as the three council members who have done nothing about it, even though they now have a majority. If they wanted to set up those industrial zones as safe sleeping areas, they could. They have the votes. They got 3 plus 1. That would be Ed Porter or possibly Emily Riley. Probably Porter, not Riley. But they would have the 4 votes if they decided they wanted to fulfill their commitments. The Green Party has been their state platform states rather unequivocally that they oppose anti-homeless laws. So they really don't have any place to run if the people that they endorse break their platform. Oh, the first place they run to is, the platform isn't mandatory, we're a consensual group, we have no accountability process, and so forth. They've been saying this for years. Or, come to a Green Party meeting and change all this. That's what Jeff Shuey used to say to me. And of course, when I started coming to Green Party meetings to support Becky Johnson, a longtime Green Party member who was trying to raise the issue of the accountability of Fitzmaurice, Joe Rigney and others in the Green Party attempted to have me muzzled and even expelled at some point because I was advocating rather strongly, and I wasn't disrupting their meetings, but I mean, I would write about what happened outside the meetings, public meetings, for the community. I would write in a satirical fashion, and this enraged some people, and they shut down all homeless work because they didn't like what I was doing. Of course, they weren't really doing any homeless work anyway, so it didn't really make much difference, but they claimed they were doing homeless work. That was the problem. And actually, since then, they have done some homeless work, I think largely because of the fact that Camp Paradise came along and did its own homeless work. That's the clean and sober homeless run encampment. And we don't consider marijuana part of that because medical marijuana is considered appropriate and a medicine as far as I'm concerned. When I say clean and sober, I mean no booze, no hard drugs. They were supported by the community. They did community projects. They cleaned up the river, and the city played little dancey games with them, sent in Officer Seeley, had them ticketed, harassed, removed their porta-potties, pressured the porta-potty companies not to have their porta-potties return. They were set upon by politically correct environmentalists led by Patricia Matichek, or not say led by, but exemplified by, who people hadn't even been down to the camp area, but were all prepared to smear the camp here and there. Got a lot of good media. But anyway, the Green Party jumped on board in favor of the camp, to their credit. Let's say a number of Green Party activists, and brought the Green Party's General Assembly, which meets once a month, along with them. And that they passed several resolutions supporting Camp Paradise and so forth. And there were a number of active Green Party members who were involved in going down there when there were alerts, concerns that the police were going to come and so forth. And my hat's off to them for that work. And they also tried, I guess, at the different conventions to get, there were a couple of resolutions against the sleeping ban that were passed, although it's already a part of their platform. The question was not, does the Green Party oppose the sleeping ban? It does. What's it going to do? And its chief spokesperson, Tim Fitzmaurice, and you might say he's not authorized to be the spokesperson, but he's the Green Party-endorsed city council member who is consistently voting against homeless civil rights issues, and yet the Green Party is remaining absolutely silent on him and continues to remain absolutely silent, thanks to interventions by the Love Fortunes and Paul Franklin. There was no further action taken on accountability for Fitzmaurice. That's been put off another month. I mention names because while I have some respect for these folks in other ways, I think they're really wrong on these positions, and they hold rather strong, powerful positions in the Green Party. Paul Franklin runs the Peace and Justice Calendar, which is his own creation, which is published in the Green Press, which is a different matter than the Green Party, by the way, for those who didn't know. It's in the center of the comic news every 2 weeks. But he also puts the Green Party's calendar of events out on the internet, and he has chosen not to put HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, in that account. And you might say, well, is it some personal bickering you have with Paul Franklin? Why make it a personal matter on the air? I said, no, it's a matter of principle. Paul Franklin was also a person who blocked resolutions against the homeless back in the last fall, and didn't do so yesterday, to his credit. But again, there's a sort of an inner elite that is more concerned with keeping politicians like Fitzmaurice and Porter, that have made promises that they've broken to the Green Party, in power, than with the principles that the Green Party stands for, at least on the homeless issue. At least that's my reading of it. And I could be wrong, but I think I'm not. And I think that's been made clear over the last 3 years. So, Green Party members have been getting better on this issue, and like I said, there's a group called the Grassroots Greens, led by Carl Wilson, Thomas Levitt, who are instrumental in, they've actually kind of fled to HUF, or they've joined HUF, and they're part of HUF, and they helped organize this Right to Sleep Summit, and they're also trying to devise a process to not only hold Fitzmaurice accountable, but, David Silva's been talking about recalling Ed Porter for quite a while, and David made it to the last meeting of the Green Party Assembly. He's not in the best of health. He did a lot of strong work for the sleeping ban over the years. He and I have had some really serious disagreements, too. That's fine. You got to struggle. You got to work through those things. Who knows? But what the Green Party decided yesterday in a relatively small meeting, but it was their monthly official Green Party Assembly meeting, was one, they were endorsing the Right to Sleep Summit. They were not going to go so far as to be legally liable for a park and approach the city and look for an overnight park. They wouldn't go that far. But they said they would still kick in $50, not just the $20 that Linda LeMaster asked for, but $50. I guess Ray Gluck-Grunick asked for $100, but still, Joe Rigney suggested $50, I believe, and to his credit, that was passed, to the credit of everyone there. I'm going to interrupt my report to answer this phone.
Hey there, you're on Free Radio.
Robert.
Yes, Ed.
How shocking. The Green Party endorsed the Housing Summit, the Homeless Summit.
Right to Sleep Summit.
Oh, my goodness. That's hard to believe. I had no idea Becky was a member either, because I looked at it, it's like, God, Ralph Nader wouldn't want to join, and I looked around and I saw that the Green Party wasn't, to my opinion, perception, they weren't doing a goddamn thing for, homeless people or anything, and I thought, well, why would I, join a party like that? I'd rather just vote independent or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, my opinion, my little humble opinion is, if they were to do more of that kind of good stuff, for in a human sense, for human beings, God, I'd be biting at the bit to sign up, join up. All it takes is going down to the governmental center. They'd have one little humble vote, right?
Right. Well, don't jump up in the air too high.
I know.
Yet, I mean, the thing about the Green Party is, for example, 75% of their meeting was taken up with electoral politics. Who's going to go to the plenary session? A whole series of positions. And the problem with the Green Party is that, somebody like Ed Porter had to swear on a stack of Bibles that he would support not just ending the sleeping ban, but taking immediate action to end the sleeping ban. And then he promptly broke his word when he was elected to office, and the Green Party still has done absolutely nothing about this. Porter has not been held accountable. And the point is not so much that's wrong on that particular move, but since it spends so much of its time electing people and then doesn't hold them accountable...
Yeah,
it doesn't. That what there really are is they're an election machine like SCAN is to get certain people in the core elected. Now, that doesn't mean this can't change. In other words, what I saw yesterday was quite encouraging. Again,
right.
It was done under the strong pressuring from Thomas Levitt, who was the facilitator of the meeting, and David Silva, myself, Carl Wilson, Ray Gluck-Grunick, a number of other people. And, I don't know if it's going to continue.
But human beings can progress. We can evolve,
Oh, yeah.
So like you said, they can change.
Yes, we can.
If they were to speak up for people, the downtrodden, it's like I'm disgusted with the way things have changed. The Green Party's no better than the damned lousy Democratic Party. They don't do anything for people causes.
Well, they're nervous about offending politicians in power, and when they're Green Party
people... But they're part of the problem.
For sure. And when the Green Party politicians get in power, like Michael Feinstein and his Green Party pal in Santa Monica, and turn anti-homeless, or the Green Party majority in Arcata, which has barred, you know, set up new anti-homeless laws in the plaza.
Oh, my goodness. New anti-homeless?
The Arcata City Council Green... It's the only city council in the country, I think, that had a Green majority.
Oh, my.
And they ended up, you know, trashing homeless people and trashing poor people in street museums.
Oh, that's an ugly, ugly party. I want no part of it. But they, like, they have possibilities. If only they...
Well, see, the problem is, Santa Cruz could be a real clarion call, but the problem we have right now is the people who run the party, and these include people like Paul Franklin and, to some extent, Joe Rigney and others, if they are, you know, willing to really face, well, I don't know if Paul Franklin will ever be willing to face this. But
don't you think they're just corrupted?
I mean, he might be. Who knows?
At the top, the people at the top are corrupted. Well, union movements, nothing ever really happens.
They believe that there's a variety of issues. You have to do, political trade-offs, there's quid pro quos, all this sort of thing. But in a way, it's a violation of what the people at the bottom have said, which is,
right.
You know, for three
That's
years,
enough.
Homeless civil rights, human rights are a basic part of the Green Party platform. And if you're not going to hold your council members accountable who are endorsed with the Green Party label, then people should not pay any attention to your electoral campaigns.
That's happening. You know, I want to join, but I countless evidences I'm not going to join something. And I look too, it's like Ralph Nader, he didn't join, and that's real telling.
Well, I got to tell you, Ralph Nader is not my favorite guy on the homeless
Still,
issue either.
I don't think of him as I voted for him because I the lesser of the vileness.
I believe I probably voted for him too, if I remember correctly. But when he came to Santa Cruz, he certainly did a lot of two-stepping and do-si-doing and ducking and weaving.
Didn't answer your question.
He didn't want to offend Mayor Sugar, and he didn't want to offend Mayor Fitzmaurice. He didn't want to say, he didn't want to say with Howard Zinn, then we should disturb the sleep of the people who pass these laws.
Well,
he didn't want to do that.
The truth, I believe the truth will set us free, you know, and we got to pull covers. That's why I admire you so, you know what I mean?
Thanks.
The cover puller, you know, as muckraker, rakers, and it's like, if it weren't for them, I mean, we'd have a literal, just a...